When Simone de Beauvoir's book The Second Sex was published, it incited a firestorm. The Pope banned it, Albert Camus condemned it, and critics divided, in fact they're still divided, over its ideas about women, sexuality and motherhood, and about its famous declaration that one is not born but rather becomes a woman. But the book has also been at the centre of a second, lesser-known controversy, which concerns its English translation. In the 1950s, the job of translating what had been, by then, become a bestseller, in fact, in France, fell to a professor of zoology in the USA, and the result, according to many scholars of Beauvoir, was a travesty. So much so that the English publishers finally bowed to pressure and have published a new translation, which is now available in the UK and the US. So you'd think that would fix the problem. Not so. In fact, the new translation has earned some fairly scathing reviews by interested parties who declared it even worse than the original. We're joined today by Sarah Glazer, a writer who first documented the translation debate in an article in 2004 and who's been following events ever since. Sarah joins us from London to talk about why The Second Sex is still making hackles rise more than 50 years after its publication. Sarah, welcome to the book show.
Thank you.
Well, can we begin by talking about what made Simone de Beauvoir turn her mind to writing The Second Sex? I mean, she'd made her name as a novelist. She was a chronicler of the French Resistance. How come she picked this as her subject?
Well, there are several stories about how she picked this. One account actually says she was interested in writing such a book as early as the mid-1930s when she was teaching philosophy at a lycée. And partly, according to one account I've read, it's because she had a friend, Colette Audrey, who talked about how terrible relations between men and women were. And Beauvoir didn't actually feel that she had these terrible, unequal relations when it came to her relationship with Sartre. And she also was a big defender of Sartre's existentialist ideas. And so she thought it would be interesting to write a book about women in the context of existentialist philosophy.
Because what she's declared that she hadn't suffered any oppression in her own life, she was very confident. But these ideas changed when she began to explore myths of femininity, didn't they?
That's exactly right. And in fact, what is very interesting is that she came to discover that in many ways, the sort of existentialist ideal of the person as a subject who exercises freedom didn't actually work for women, because women had actually been quite oppressed and had their freedom curtailed through most of history.
So what kind of an impact did it make in its first, the original publication in French, and then later when it was translated into English?
Well, it's very interesting. It seemed like a very shocking book, I think, in both France and in America in its English translation, simply because it confronted sexuality very directly. And she talked about things like women's orgasms and their menstrual periods and things which were not really discussed very much then except in sex manuals. So it had a rather divided reaction, and there were some people who thought it was sort of terribly written and confused. One of those was Elizabeth Hardwick, the novelist. But at the same time, it was a huge bestseller in both countries. And, you know, 18-year-old girls could be seen on the metro, you know, reading it avidly. And some people basically said, including writer Stevie Smith, I don't think she likes women very much. Some people thought it was actually a very unsympathetic portrayal of women and sort of blamed women for not having achieved equality.
Like she did.
Yes.
Well, let's go to the first English translation. The publisher, Alfred Knopf, decided to buy English rights and to publish a translation. The person he chose to do the job was a retired professor of zoology, Howard Pashley. The question is, why?
Yes. Well, it's a very funny story. Alfred Knopf's wife, Blanche Knopf, went to Paris to look for books that could be published in English translation. And when she arrived in 1949, The Second Sex was a huge sensation. And she didn't know French very well. So she thought, from what her interpreter had said, that he had that this was a book about sex, that it was a sex manual like the Kinsey Report, which, of course, was at that point, you know, a huge sensation in the United States. And so she brought it back and said, "Alfred, honey, here's a sex manual like the Kinsey Report, and so who better to read it and tell them whether they should publish it but a sex expert?" And that was Howard Parsley, who happened also to be a friend of theirs.
Yes, the alignments are interesting in these translation stories. There have been many criticisms of his translation. I think you said in one article that he translated through the prism of the 1950s. Tell us what you meant by that.
Yes, well, in many ways, that his translation seems dated, and he makes some very funny translations, actually. You know, one of the chapters, which is about women's lived experience, that's the French title for it, he changes to Women's Life Today, which, as the translators point out, sounds sort of like a ladies' magazine. And he didn't know much about existentialism. So, for example, when Beauvoir uses certain terms like the woman as subject, meaning an independent person, and she talks about subjectivité, he thinks that means she's talking about how women can't be objective and rational. And so you get some very strange translations in which he's sort of describing women as these kind of irrational, emotional creatures. And he also, in some cases, misunderstands her and thinks that she's saying that, you know, women in their essential being are somehow inferior, which was not something she thought at all, because existentialists believe that you are what you make yourself.
Yes, he's apparently cutting out about 15% of the work, and cutting out references to Virginia Woolf and taking out examples of women's anger about their condition.
Yes, apparently, well, Alfred Knopf thought the book was much too long and wouldn't sell well at its length. And so he directed Parsley to cut it. He said that Simone de Beauvoir suffered from verbal diarrhea. So Parsley actually asked Beauvoir to help him come up with cuts, and she refused to cooperate with that. She didn't want any of it cut. And so he ended up cutting about half of the history chapter, which cut out very interesting discussions of women in medieval and Renaissance times who led armies and did all kinds of amazing things. He cut out about half of the chapter on the married woman, which was a very detailed discussion of women's housework and how much time that took for women. And this wasn't actually discovered until the 1970s, when women started entering the field of philosophy in the United States in greater numbers and started to read her in the original.
Okay, so this is when the first serious criticisms arose, isn't it? I mean, about sort of 30 years or so after it was first translated.
Yes, that's exactly right. And in fact, the first person to discover this and publish something about it was Margaret Simons, who was a philosopher at Southern Illinois University. And she started to have a conversation with a graduate student about Beauvoir's discussion of bourgeois feminism versus socialist feminism. And he said, "I didn't read that anywhere." And she went back to the English translation and realized that this whole discussion had been deleted. And she then wrote an article saying, "What's Missing from the Second Sex," in which she discussed in great detail the passages that had been deleted.
So it's interesting that the book meanwhile sold merrily on, despite scholars talking about how sloppy it was.
Yes, well, it was a very essential text. You know, as women's studies became a kind of standard course in almost every university in the course of the 70s and 80s, The Second Sex was selling very well because it was often required reading in those courses. But, you know, most Americans, even American feminist scholars, were reading it in English. And so it was a relatively esoteric group that was aware that there were these problems, certainly until about 1990, when there started to be conferences of experts on Beauvoir to celebrate the 50th anniversary of its publication in 1949.
Well, an article which you wrote in the New York Times in 2004 brought up what had been then a scholarly debate and brought it up to mainstream attention. Was there a response from the publishers to your piece?
That's a good question. Not really. In fact, the publishers refused to comment. I called Knopf, and they said they did not want to comment on this issue. But I think what happened was there was a sort of renewed effort to try to get a new translation. There were many letters sent by Toral Moy, who's one of the Beauvoir scholars who wanted a new translation, to Knopf. Beauvoir's adopted daughter, Sylvia Le Bon de Beauvoir, said the translation was a scandal, and asked Knopf to do a new translation. So there were many more requests to them, but they essentially turned everyone down and pretty much made the same argument that they'd made all along, which was that sort of a defensive reaction, that it was not a feminist, you know, an anti-feminist plot to perpetuate this translation, and they didn't want to sell the rights to anyone else because it sold very well. It sold at that time about 14,000 copies a year, which, you know, if you add up all the years, ends up being a very nice chunk of change.
So they were reluctant to do it because they, why would you need to? If you're in the business of selling books.
You have to spend money for a translation, for new translators. As far as they could tell, there was, you know, still very strong demand for it from academic departments. So why bother?
So what's the next part of the story then? Because a new translation has finally arrived. But as we said, this version has also met some heavy-duty criticism from academics and others who say that there are clumsy grammatical mistakes and another attempt to put words into Beauvoir's mouth or to change her meaning. Tell us about the story of that new translation.
Okay. Well, the way the new translation came about was that an editor at the French publisher, Gallimard, basically had the brilliant idea of going to the publisher that had the British rights, Jonathan Cape, and she approached an editor there and said, you should really publish this translation. And then, because of mergers, it turned out Jonathan Cape was actually under the same corporate roof as Knopf, and so they ended up splitting the cost of the translation. But as far as the controversy went, I would say that many of the movers and shakers in campaigning for a new translation were philosophers, and a lot of their complaint was that Parsley didn't really understand it when Beauvoir was using philosophical language. He had no training in philosophy. Existentialism was still quite a new thing in the United States. He apparently only read any existentialism once he finished the translation and thought, gee, I should learn something about this. And so many of her, she herself, Beauvoir, had been very rigorously trained as a philosopher and had actually come in second to Sartre in the national examinations in philosophy. And so she was often referring to known philosophical ideas and known philosophical terms, and he tended to sort of translate these into sort of everyday words that struck him as sounding good, I guess, or maybe he just simply didn't understand them. So what a lot of the philosophers would have liked would have been an annotated edition, an edition with lots of footnotes, which would have explained what these terms meant, would have explained who the writers were that she was referring to, which are often sort of people that have become obscure in the decades since. Some of them would have liked there to be a team of translators that would have included philosophers and maybe people from some of the other disciplines that she talks about, because it's an encyclopedic book that has lots of biology in it, lots of psychology in it, lots of poetry, lots of history. And so I think that's what they were pushing for, a more academic work. And the publishers didn't want that. They wanted it to be a trade book, as they say, you know, a bestseller that anybody could pick up. And it was already getting to be a huge book because they were restoring the cuts. And so some of the philosophers, including Toral Moy, who campaigned for it, feel that the new translation didn't do that, didn't really supply that kind of extra information.
So who did they get to translate the second lot, the second translation?
Okay, so the second lot was translated by two Americans who lived in Paris for about the last 30 years, Sheila Malavenie Chevalier and Constance Bord, both of whom have taught English at one of the prestigious French universities and have done translation in the past, but they've never translated a huge literary work on this scale.
And why were they chosen?
Well, the reason that they were chosen is because they went to one of these conferences in 1999 in Paris at the 50th anniversary of the Second Sex, and they heard all these scholars complaining about the poor translation, and so they turned to one another and said, well, why don't we do it? And it turned out that Sheila Malavenie Chevalier was familiar with an editor at Gallimard, the original French publisher, because she had been a student at the university where Sheila was teaching, and she called her up and said, we're ready to translate it. And so this editor, Anne Solange Noble, became herself a big campaigner for the new translation, and she essentially presented these as the perfect translators to CAPE when she approached the British publisher CAPE.
So what's your sense? I mean, horses for courses, as they say. If you want a bestseller and you don't want to have too much philosophy in it, you're not going to get a philosopher to translate it, presumably. But do you think this means that, we need a third translation into English?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I have a friend who's a translator who says you need a new translation every 10 years of any work because they become so dated. I don't know if we need a new translation. I mean, some people have suggested that perhaps there could be a separate volume published of footnotes for those who want a really, you know, scholarly annotation and want to understand everything that's in the book. Whether anyone's going to actually do that, I don't know, but it's certainly been discussed. And I guess the other sort of controversy currently in the translation that Toral Moy raised is that she felt that the new translation didn't read as well as Parsley's, that in some ways, by trying to be so literal and so faithful to Beauvoir, which the translators say they were trying to do, that it has a sort of more awkward style in English. And I think that's really a question that the readers will have to decide reading it. You know, some of these are very technical questions. You know, when you say la femme, does that mean woman or does it mean womankind? And I think a lot of these are questions that are matters of judgment and context that the translators had to make. And I think really the readers will have the last word, and we'll see how well it sells. That will tell us how well it reads.
Well, Sarah Glaser, thanks so much for speaking to us today on The Book Show.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
And Sarah Glaser is a writer for, amongst other things, the New York Times and the She Writes website. This is The Book Show on ABC Radio National. I'm Ramona Koval.